Welcome to Failing Up. We don't have a theme song.
Well, we might not have a theme song, Eden, but we do have a theme, and that is failure.
And we talk to people about their failures and mistakes and how they grew from it.
Simple as that. Listen up.
Welcome to Failing Up, everyone.
Thank
you for listening. Yes, we are back. Yeah, we have a great guest today. We have the lovely Erin Gibson here.
Ooh.
Is there going to be an applause?
Of course, always applause.
Okay.
You can't hear it?
No.
Eden, it's in your imagination.
I know.
And there it is. You hear it? And now it's even louder. Okay. Because everybody is excited that Erin is here.
Right.
So thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Failing Up. We're very excited to have you here.
It's a Sunday evening. The sun's about to set.
I love it. I'm so not ready for winter.
You have central air.
I know. I am blessed.
You are fully hashtag blessed.
I know. You know, I slept in here last week when it was like, there was a really hot day.
Because this room gets really cold.
Yeah. And it was like my coldest room. So yeah.
It's a hardwood floor though, for those of you listening. So where you just pull an air mattress in here?
I slept on, because I wasn't using a blanket. I slept on the blanket.
Ooh.
I know. My back did not thank me.
I was going to say,
that is rough.
I know. In the middle of the night, I got up and I went to the couch. My bedroom is a hot box, everybody. It's a toaster. So
do you have, I could talk about this for 75,000 days, house stuff.
I know, right?
My house I've nicknamed Shit Castle because we moved in before we did renovations.
Oh, okay.
Wow. So we're living in the renovations.
Right.
And fun. It's a triplex.
How long has that been?
August.
Oh, wow.
And so we just got central air 2 weeks ago.
Wait, so you've been living in works for mm-hmm. almost a year now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I get a sinus infection like every time they have to do like actual, like last week we had a retaining wall that failed.
Oh, no.
Which you probably know about because you're in the hills.
Yes.
So, and it wasn't disclosed to us by the guy we bought the place from because mm-hmm. he was a slumlord. And he thankfully paid for half of it.
Wow.
But they had to take out an entire wall from a hill.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Fucking with Mother Nature stuff. It's insane. My sister was like, you should never buy a home. You'll hate it. She was absolutely fucking right.
But so you're 11 months in. How long before it's finished?
Never. Never.
I feel like that's the thing. I feel like I'm never going to be done decorating my
house. You aren't. You're never done.
You're never done.
Like decorating, but as far as like construction goes.
My friend's been living in our house for 8 years and she just finished renovating the kitchen. There's still stuff to do and she wants to move now.
Because she's so over it.
She's just so over it.
It could. Do you know yeah. Orlando Soria?
No.
He's a designer and he was like, he just was like, don't. Live in your. She's like, you're going to ruin your house for
yeah.
you if you do if you try to like renovate while you're in there. But we
absolutely.
Got kicked out of our duplex mm-hmm. that we were renting in West Hollywood because they're going to raise it and build condos.
Ugh.
And so we didn't have anywhere to go that was less expensive than buying a house.
I know, it sucks. Oh my god,
we were paying. We had rent control apartment.
I know.
We're paying $1,200 for a 2-bedroom with a yard and a garage.
How's that even possible?
It was crazy.
Insane.
That's so, like, you're a unicorn.
I know.
Like, that never happens.
Can you imagine, like, I would have died there. If they would have let me, I would have died there.
Sad. Gentrification, everybody.
Yeah. I mean, you do see it happening more and more around
yeah.
the Hollywood area where, like, old shitty apartments or houses are now torn down and now there's a building there that's, like, high-end. Like
someone Airbnb'd a tent in West Hollywood.
No.
For
that's
like
where we're at.
For like $50 a night.
A yurt or a tent?
It was a tent.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In someone's backyard.
Okay, at least.
In someone's backyard. I know.
Can you imagine in the heat? Did you ever go to Coachella?
No. I've been to other kind of festivals like Coachella, which are just as bad, if not worse. But Coachella's in April, so it's not like terrible.
Except some years it is, and the 2 years I went, it was the hottest.
Oh,
and there
no.
were people camping on the campgrounds, and you would see them come out of their tents and like at 4 p.m.
Nope.
And they were just like, you know, drenched in sweat,
yeah.
like rat people. Yeah.
That doesn't sound enjoyable to
no.
me for some reason.
And plus drugs. I couldn't do it.
Oh, God.
What drugs would you do at Coachella?
Well, I'm a weed head,
mm-hmm.
not a term, but. I don't like hallucinogenics when I'm not temperature controlled.
Yeah,
okay,
no, that could
fair.
Be dangerous.
If I'm hot and I'm like tripping, it's not good.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a good combination.
It's awful. sweat just dripping down your butt crack into your shoes.
Mm-hmm.
No. No.
I did it in the snow in college. That was fun.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah, that was a good time. But yeah, and
where was that?
I went to school at Rutgers. So
oh yeah, I almost went to Rutgers.
Really?
As a transfer student in the drama department.
Really?
Yep. And I decided not to because there was a kid in the department who was super encouraging before my audition, but then there was he had some weird relationship with another woman in the in the school, and she was super threatening to me, and I got super scared. I was like, oh, this is what New Jersey's like. I don't think I lived in Texas. I wasn't used to, like, you know.
So I New Jersey out. People. Yeah, that makes
New
sense.
New Jersey people.
But were you were born out here, though? Or no?
I was born in California, but then I was, for the most part, raised in Texas. But my dad was in the oil industry, so we moved to Ohio, to Kentucky, to Florida. Like, we were kind of all over the place. And so...
Oh, no. Okay.
I say insurance, and I say pen.
Oh, okay.
So
oh.
I have Texas words.
Draw. Mm-hmm. I love it.
I was just watching the movie Heathers again. Have you guys
seen it? Oh, I watch it every year.
Well, it's funny because he moved to like every place that I know. Lived, except his father was a construction guy and not an oil guy.
Which is weird. I was like, why would a construction
guy We also guy do used that? Beacon's Moving Company, which is a weird ad or whatever product placement in that movie. I don't even remember.
It no.
It's the I box. Remember. There's boxes stacked up and they all say Beacons, which is funny. A massive moving company.
Yeah. And that movie, by the way. I mean, I show it to a
it's
friend.
It's a lot of, like, stuff that would not fly today.
Yeah, it's like pre-Columbine, well, they like tried school to make it violence.
Fly. I know. A lot of movies, if you look at it again, it's like, oh my God, we should have, like, done something about this.
I mean, do you guys remember the movie The Toy?
No.
Yes.
Yes, Richard Pryor, obviously a black man. The premise of the movie is there's this rich white kid that sees him and they buy him as a toy.
That's so
a slave,
weird.
Essentially. Ugh. Yeah. And the father is racist and, like, it's...
I know.
Wow. Yeah.
Where did but we they get talk a lot. It's been a second since I've watched that movie, but do they talk pretty openly about Richard Pryor wasn't the kind of guy who just like did something for money and didn't have it have like political.
Oh, no.
Right?
It absolutely.
And not that
like,
that movie should be remade, but.
No, it definitely gave you the racist or shitty vibe. Not like, hey, I'm.
Because the kid learns in the end that he's like that his whole system is flawed. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, and he treats Richard like a human being and he loves him. Regardless.
As movies do.
Yes.
Yes.
It is a classic movie, though. I love all those movies that can't be remade.
I do think, outside, because we were talking about horror earlier, but outside of horror, it's really hard for movies to depict someone as really terrible like that now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everyone has to be likable.
It's weird, because it's like on some level, I feel like people are like, oh, make him unlikable. I want more unlikable characters, but make the villain likable. And it's like, what? I know.
Yeah, we want to see why the villain does what he does.
I know. And it's like, all right.
Do you think that's because of Breaking Bad?
I don't know. I just know that it's like a note from executives being like, this needs to be like relatable and like unlikable. And I'm like, I just want to go rogue for a second and like make a character who's actually super likable.
Yeah.
Very, very likable. Just, you know what? Very, very, nothing wrong about them. If you had to do a fuck, marry, kill, you could not kill them. Never. Like, you'd have to probably marry them. Like, it's that's I think how we should just, like, I don't know. I feel like it's all like a pendulum.
Yep.
So like if it swings one way, if we're making really, really likable characters, then we have to swing it the other way, which is what I think happened with the election too.
Well, that's what I think truly, like, now people don't even want to see villains in their entertainment because they are like, well, we're living it every day.
Right.
Yeah, often. Although that's why I think it's making room for a lot of like this magical realism, like Get Out and Sorry to Bother You and all this stuff, because it's like a fun medium to make fun of that.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel like I feel like there is like an appetite for horror ever since the election, because it's like we're living in it. So yeah. It's like, you know,
American Horror Story. Trump.
We can't laugh anymore. Normally, we need to see it in a horror way.
Yeah, we need to. Well, the 80s were like a really not that this is as bad. Not that this isn't worse than the 80s. This is worse than the 80s. But during the 80s when it was like, you know, Reagan was in charge and like the AIDS epidemic was at its height and economics, the economy was in the fucking toilet. There was great horror and great like dark, dark, dark comedy. I mean, like The Toy, like Risky Business is like a great dark comedy. Like I don't know if anybody would make that kind of movie now.
Yeah, yeah. You had a lot of guts back then.
It really did. People took chances.
Yeah. I know. But there's also, it was not as saturated as there is now. Like, now there's just so many places you can make the movie, like, that you could do it on your iPhone and then it becomes Tangerine. Like, you know, it's endless. But anyway, back to you. Yes. This is about you.
Let's talk about your youth. So you grew up moving around a lot. So does that mean you don't make like really close friends as a kid?
I do. I was just writing a thing about female friendships and how hard it is. And it's like a scientific fact. Like if you moved a lot as a kid, it's very hard for you to make friends because you just don't see people. It's not even that you're not capable of doing it. You just have this like innate inability to get attached to people because right. they're going to,
you're scared that if you do, then it's going to be heartbroken when you leave them.
Right. Yeah.
It's like with dogs. Yeah.
This is same with dogs. Yeah. Yeah. This is the longest. I moved here in 2006 and it's the longest I've ever lived anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so I have like friends that I've had for like 10, 12 years and it's great. Yeah. I love it. It's a very it's new
refreshing.
Thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, you get to have like, you get to be settled. There's a part of me though, I worry that craves the newness. And so I really try to talk myself out of that. Like I know, like, and especially here, like when you're working with new people on a new job or like, oh, you're, you know, doing punch-ups for a week. And this one thing, like you make new friends and you're like, oh my God, you can die by friends here.
Yeah. I was just talking to someone about this because there was this podcast that was like talking about how, I think it was like a TED thing and how we're like, we have like a lot of friends on Facebook and all this, but like we're only capable of having close relationships. Like out of like thousands of friends, only like 100 were able to like remember their name and their birthdays and like actually have a real, real relationship with. That's like 100's the cap. So, but what happens is sometimes we'll have people kind of leave our lives and there'll like be periods where we just don't hear from them for a little while. And then, but like, so that number can like not be the same people that interchanges, but we're only capable of so much. But I feel like in LA, you can get like new friends. It's like summer camp sometimes.
All every week.
It's weird. I know.
I have like 8 people in my life.
You know what?
That's smart.
My friend just went through a breakup and I haven't spoken to her in ages. But now that she doesn't have a boyfriend anymore, she's all over the place with me. She's like, hey, let's get dinner. And I'm like, just want to let you know that in times like these, your female friends got your back and you're going to really appreciate your female friendships. And I'm going to be here for you. But just remember not to neglect us.
Right. Yeah, you have to nurture. And that's such a stereotypical thing, too, that I'm absolutely guilty of and my friends are guilty of. But you have to like just take a second and be like, okay, this person I'm in a relationship with is, if you're living with that person, especially like they're there all the time.
Yeah, you got them.
You got to make time for your friends.
Right, right. It's important.
I feel like guys do it at marriage. That's where I lose most of my friends.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, they'll hang all the way and then marriage, boom, switch is flipped and that's it.
What about when they have kids? Is it even worse?
Or forget about it. Then I never see them ever. Nuzzy, for example. Like, yeah. You know, he didn't get married first. He actually had kids first. But, like, I see him every weekend. I see him, like, once every 4 or 5 months now kind of
Well,
thing.
Then the thing is the onus is on you. Like, cause you have to go over there.
That's
correct. You have to make all the effort.
100%. Yeah. Well, no, they're actually... maybe I shouldn't say this on the air, but he definitely has reached out recently and been like...
But here's what I think. Also, like, when people are like, let's hang out. I don't even like, I'm like, no, you got to prove, like, you got to be like, do you want to have dinner next week?
Right. I hate
free.
That.
I'm free these 3 days. Cause I think like, otherwise you're just lying.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a thing to say to Phil, like to show I care about you, but not enough to make like a decision.
You know what I'd rather have? Just an email, like don't respond back to the email or don't just say like whatever the email's about, acknowledge that. You don't have to go the extra step.
Let's hang out is like the LOL of answers.
It means
in LA,
nothing.
Right?
It means nothing.
Yeah, let's hang out. Okay, cool. Yeah, soon. Soon.
Soon. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Don't you wish there was like a magic word that was like, I like you. I'm full up right now.
I don't want to see you right now. Or are you
Yeah.
It's like I ran into my friend at the grocery store the other day and I was just like, I wanted to say it, be like, oh, so didn't want to run into you right now because, like, I haven't seen you in a bit and I really was fine with it. Yeah.
That's what's weird when you realize that you don't miss that person.
I know. Yeah. And you run into them, which happens. That's a weird thing about LA. People think it's such a big city. And I'm like, you run into everybody.
If you're at Whole Foods 365, you're going to see everyone you've ever known in your life.
Trader Joe's on Hyperion. I've seen everyone.
I won't go there. I think I refuse.
I've seen to Sia see there. It's crazy.
Wait, Sia goes to the Trader Joe's on Hyperion?
I shouldn't say that.
She deals with that parking lot?
I don't think she does.
You think someone drives
I
her
I think
there?
Someone drives her.
Then I would go. If someone drove me to that Trader Joe's, I would absolutely go inside.
Isn't Whole Foods 365 better than Trader Joe's at the end of the day or no?
I don't know what's cheaper because I don't have Whole Foods 365.
Mm-hmm, me either.
I don't live in this part of town. Do you feel sorry for
it
me?
It is no, a very special.
It's, I feel you're blessed. No, I feel just that it does different things. You don't. Trader Joe's has one brand of every kind of food.
Right.
So you go for those things. And Whole Foods just has everything, but also drains your wallet. Although now it's becoming like an Amazon thing. Mm-hmm. Like,
oh, it's crazy.
Scary.
Like they ask you if you want to scan your thing for points.
I had to get the app because I wanted to get points. Because I'm like,
they got you.
And I'm like, they got me. I drank the Kool-Aid.
I got $10 for Prime Day the other day, okay? Just for spending some money.
My favorite holiday.
It is quite
wonderful. Wait, at Whole Foods?
Yeah, so I went to Whole Foods. I did the little beep thing. And because I spent more than $10, I get $10 on Prime Day. Yeah.
That is so great.
Wait, when is Prime Day?
It's the 6th. I think it's
tomorrow.
Monday or Tuesday.
It's tomorrow.
And that's just a made up celebration. That
it's
they
a Black Friday for like Amazon. You get like big deals. Mm-hmm. But in the summer, I think they're just craving the summer. You
because know. Sales are low or something?
Yeah. Because mm-hmm. no one has like, there's no Christmas, which is fine.
Right.
I think there should be a Christmas in July.
Well, that's what this is. Prime Day is Christmas in July.
They have to be making so... I don't know anybody who goes to Target anymore.
Yeah.
Everyone buys Target. It's a delight.
You go to the West Hollywood one or you go to the one...
Both. I go to... They're such a delight. I don't go to the one in Glendale. Because I used to live in West Hollywood, so I'm just used to that. And I was like, where I'm used to.
Were you living there when a person got stabbed in the neck with a knife block?
No. What? Oh, in the parking lot or something?
Oh, no. It was in the store.
Mm. Oh, no.
The knife display... Mm-hmm. Where they have blocks, the butcher block of knives, whatever you call it. Oh, someone took one out and sliced someone's neck.
Oh, my
open.
God.
So if you go to that Target, you'll see the knives, they don't come
locked
out.
Locked in.
Oh, okay.
They're like glued in.
That's really
I go
funny.
To the city one at the Beverly Connection.
Oh, that one is so...
It's kind of stupid.
The Beverly
Connection.
I'm going to Marshall's like...
Because Marshall's is there, Nordstrom Rack. And all my discount stores are in one place.
Strangely, I know exactly where you guys are talking about. And I'm from I live in Orange County.
Oh, but you know.
But yeah, I know.
There used to be a Lomans across the street.
It's no Treasure Island. Is that what it's called?
Treasure
Island. Oh,
Fashion Island.
Fashion Island.
Oh, yes.
Do you know about this place?
I've heard of it.
Orange County?
Yeah.
Yes, it's in Newport Beach. Very fancy.
It's fancy?
Oh, my gosh.
It's like the fanciest. It's like Prada Grove, basically.
Oh, yeah. It's like Grove Squared.
Like the Rolex store. Is that whatever the place
but
is?
Yes. Malls stress me out now because of the online shop. Like, I went to Zara the other day and I'm like, I can't with this. No, and you don't have my size and I don't want to deal with like the trying and how many clothes you have to bring it. No, I just don't want it.
Nope. I just order everything.
Everything online. I just ordered something online. I got a big box, like 18 things. I'm not going to keep them all. I just want to try them. And then I return them.
Yeah, that's how I do Zappos.
Exactly.
I do go to the farmer's market to write.
Okay, that's good.
Because I like the white noise and it's not...
The literal white noise of the white people.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, so many. And every white language that you could ever, like German, Polish.
Totally. Swedish.
Swedish.
Yep. All of it.
All white. No, none of them speak English. And it's so, because no one bothers you. You don't have to feel bad about not giving up your table. And because there's no ceilings, there's just the umbrellas. There's no bouncing. I have really crazy sensitive ears. Hmm. And like, for example, I can't go to... night market.
Mm-hmm.
I can't go to any of the night marketplaces because they're so small and so loud, and it gives me a headache.
Oh wow!
So I can't go ride a lot of places that are super tinny, but that's perfect because it just kind of dissipates into the into the air.
That is true. Yeah, it's not as that's the Grove is
it's,
not
sucks to get to.
I know, and the parking
it's awful. You have to. I have to go at like nine in the morning if I want to go do that. But I can ride there for like 8 hours.
Wow. That's
it's just like comfortable.
Yeah. It's interesting with writers how they just pick a place and that's, you know, you just sit there and do it all day long. But, you know, and a lot of people here out here think that's like, oh, they're just trying to show off. But really, like you said, it's just that you need that, like you need something else other than the four walls of your house.
It's not good for your for your brain.
Yeah.
To be in the same place all the time.
And you forget how people are. Sometimes it's just good to just like observe human behavior.
Yeah.
Because we're so in our heads that we forget how people actually behave that we're not going to write authentically.
Yeah. That's what I figure out every time I'm in public.
So back to you. So you moved around a lot.
Yeah.
When do you realize you're funny?
Well, that was a coping mechanism it's a dysfunctional coping mechanism mm-hmm. out of moving a lot and having to feel like, and plus I have been this height since third grade. I'm 5'11".
Wow.
So it was a preemptive strike to make fun of myself before anybody else could get to me at a school. Mm-hmm. And that usually was a way to get friends and just kind of be like, hey, I'm cool, everybody. Don't worry. I'm not some weirdo, even though I was a total weirdo. But it pretty much worked, except when I we lived in Kentucky for a year in this town called Catlettsburg, which you'll never guess what they did there. Cattle. And that's how they do things. Yeah. They name the town after the thing.
You don't want to go to Incestburg, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, no. Exactly. So that was like, that didn't work there.
Yeah.
And I do think it's because they were dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And
your humor was too high level.
I don't usually like blaming the audience, but in this case I will. They were not able to, when they saw me making fun of myself, they saw it as weakness. And so I was like very heavily bullied and super, like it was super stressful for me. So much so that I had chronic nosebleeds. I'd have chronic nosebleeds like once a week, like full Stranger Things style, just like blood coming out of my nose after, for no reason, just in the middle of science class.
When you are young and moving around and doing this, using this mechanism to make friends, is it something you're conscious of?
I don't think so. But also, I don't think so. And I don't think that everyone who moves does it. My family is like, my family's Irish Catholic, very dark sense of humor. Like, you don't come in the house wearing something weird without everyone just pouncing on you.
Right.
If you have anything weird, anything different, you're being made fun of all the time. So I kind of grew up with that mentality of insecurity and like no one's on your side.
Yeah.
They love each other, but it's that's the love is
right.
They make fun of you to show you that they care.
It's just like living in New Jersey. I swear to God, just like growing up in New Jersey. That's the whole mentality of the entire state.
That's like Polish Jews fuck with too. You. Like my Polish grandmother would always like in order she'd be like, you're so ugly. And my dad'd be like, she means you're beautiful. Like that's how they,
are you serious?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that one?
They just put you down to build you up. It's weird, but
it doesn't work.
But
it doesn't not. It's a good way to like have kids with drug problems.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or just like kids
or eating disorders. Or
exactly. It's just like I just never felt confident. But
and that's why you killed your grandmother.
So totally.
Yeah. But it was deserved.
If the Nazis couldn't do it, I was gonna do it. I was gonna finish her off.
Finish the job. Did she escape the Nazis?
Yes. And she would give me so much, like, I've never
seen. She used it as a, like.
She always did. She was, like, one of those, I would wear leggings, and she'd be like, are you wearing leggings? So, you know, Hitler wore leggings. Like what? Like, what? This has nothing to do with anything.
Hitler liked broccoli. Okay.
Hitler also used plates.
I'm like, he was an artist. She's like, exactly. So that's why you should be a doctor. And I'm like, you know, like
Dr. Mangala?
Yeah,
you guys could do this all.
I could. She'd be like, oh, yeah, you know, you're single. You know, Hitler had a girlfriend. Like, totally stuff like that. Like,
it was always back to Hitler.
Hmm.
My God.
I'm like, you've got a fascination with Hitler, I think, Bubby.
I'm glad I grew up without grandparents.
She was literally, though, from Berlin, like at the epicenter. Mm-hmm. She was very German. I think the only reason why she even survived was because she looked not so Jewish and had a not so Jewish last name. And spoke really good German that she could pass off as like an
Aryan.
Wait,
so she was never found out as being a
Jew? She lived for like a little bit. Her family was very wealthy, which had lost all of it. And they like hid under, they paid a Polish family to hide them.
They were like opposite Anne Frank. They were in the basement.
They were in the basement.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. It's a horrible story.
We're not going
to get into
it. I could do a whole podcast about how she survived, but yeah. But anyway. I understand this whole Irish Catholic thing, though, because
I think the Irish Catholics and Jewish culture are very similar.
But yeah.
I look, as an outsider looking in, Jewish culture seems nicer to me.
They're a little kinder, but
like Irish people, if you're, well, at least in the States, if you're very down and out, they like to kick you when you're done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean,
but if it gets really bad, then they'll be like, oh, of course we're here to help.
Right.
Like my mom is so good in an emergency, like Florence Nightingale.
Oh, can
shit.
I have her number?
Oh yeah, she. If you want
to put an emergency number,
it's. She, if you have an emergency, she's great. If you're sick and you need her, she's on top of it. She's always there for you.
Amazing.
She doesn't call me very much. You know, like right. I have to call her. Like she checks in. She's in and out of like
she's an unsupportive boyfriend.
Yeah, and she's always happy to talk to me. And like you know, we have lovely conversations. But she's just not on top of shit.
Right.
Unless it's a fucking unless you're gonna die, and then she's like, "Well, of course I'm here for you." It's really weird.
So is she always supportive of your career choices and all that, and
yeah.
being funny and all that. Because like, it's a little different, I guess, than what most people want to do.
And what did, yeah. sorry, what did a young Aaron want to do?
Yeah.
Okay, so I wanted to be the next Steven Spielberg.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a thing that I have framed at my house that says it's like a life path that we had to do in third grade. Ooh. And at the end, there was a crystal ball and it said the next Steven Spielberg.
Wow.
But then, because I'm a woman, and I had this dream I had this dream until like, late junior high, but teachers would say when they would see, I would put this in everything. I want to be the next Steven Spielberg. They were like, you can't do that.
Wow.
You can't be a director. Cause that's not a female job. And, oh, and these were like small towns. It's not like sure. no one in New York City was ever going to say that, but it was super discouraging. And so I kind of gave up that dream. And then in college, I took a weird class, went to a bunch of colleges because
mm-hmm.
that's my brand. And I was taking a class on journalism, and for some reason in this journalism class, oh no, it was a media writing class. And for some reason we had to write a commercial, to figure out format, commercial format, not a screenwriting format. There was like a newsreel format, and then there was a sketch format.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but we had to write a sketch, and I was like, this is what I want to do. So then I left Texas. I graduated college, and then I went to Chicago to study at Second City.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because I was like, oh, that's the path. That's where you go to study sketch.
Did you just figured out, or did somebody tell you to do this? Or
I got a... Okay, yes. Okay, so there was a woman who was from Houston who went to Second City, Chicago, and then moved back to Houston. She was teaching improv classes. Mm. And it was like... This is when nobody knew what the fuck improv was. So there was like five of us.
Mm-hmm.
Then we started a group called Haley's Comic.
Hilarious. Oh, I love it.
It's puns. You know, puns.
Yes, yes.
And we had a great time. Another two of the guys from my group live out here and work as actors.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, that's impressive. That's pretty cool.
That's pretty good numbers. There were six of us.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So you went out, you went to Chicago.
So she was the one who was like, if you want to do this, you got to go to Chicago. Mm-hmm. So I went to Chicago. I auditioned for Second City. I got in. I had the time of my fucking life. It was great. I had no money. I lived in an amazing apartment that was $300 a month.
Huh. Whoa.
This was in 2005. And I just did improv all the time. And I worked as a receptionist at a hair salon.
Wow.
And
that's so great.
It was great. And I just fell in love with it. And I was like, I have to dedicate. I knew I was going to dedicate my life to doing that, but I really didn't figure out what the path was. And that was just a time I could just do it. Like figure out the rest later, you know?
Yeah. So what made you move to LA?
Okay. So then I'm living in Chicago. My dad lived in Valyermo, which is like an hour and a half north of here. In the high desert, and I was coming out to visit him for Christmas, and I hooked up with, I got in touch with a friend of a friend who is a director and a screenwriter. And I was like, hey, I'm doing Second City in Chicago. I'm coming out to LA for Christmas. Can I meet you and ask you a bunch of questions about career stuff? Cause I didn't know anything about Hollywood.
Yeah.
And he said yes. So we went out for dinner, asked him a bunch of questions. We slept together. I married him 7 weeks later.
Wow.
Oh my God.
And then I moved to LA. It was so impetuous. And we were married for 7 years.
Wow.
And we're still really good friends.
That's really, you are a unicorn.
Seriously.
What the hell? You did everything not LA. You got married Vegas style, I guess, because it's like quick.
Yeah.
And like
full.
And you're still friends. And it lasted, first of all. Wow.
Yeah. It lasted a long time.
It lasted three LA marriages.
That's, yeah, I know.
Right? That's crazy.
The math. Yeah.
8 Kardashian marriages. We're going to have a math book of all the equivalences one day.
That is like 300 Scaramucci's.
300 Scaramucci's.
I've had a period longer than a Scaramucci. I know. It's so weird.
So, yeah, it was just like, I was 25.
Yeah.
I didn't care. I was just like, let's live life.
Sure.
And then we got divorced when I was 24. I think I was 31.
Wow, really? Whoa.
No, I must have been younger. I was 29 or something.
I was 28
or I was 30. You 29 were, or 30.
When you divorced?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I remember I was like, and it was during Christmas. Mm-hmm. Everything's around Christmas.
I know. Everything in my stuff is like around
is
Christmas.
Is it weird? It's weird. Why do you think people just like evaluate stuff?
Are you a Libra?
No, I'm an Aries.
Oh. They're both kind of.
Fire signs?
Yeah. So I think.
Wait,
I don't know.
Is Aries a fire sign? It is. Yeah.
Everything bad for me in my life has happened during Christmas. My mom died on Christmas. Like I found out I had that breast cancer gene on Christmas. It's crazy. I know. Really
Wait,
weird.
Have we discussed?
We discussed
okay,
this.
Okay, yeah,
yeah.
Okay. That we both are like
that we're both fake
cancer genies.
Yeah, we both have fake boobies. Everybody, I know.
Yeah, cancer-free fake boobies.
I hope my chest started hurting today, but I hope it's just like.
But don't you get those weird pains when your nerves are growing back together?
Is that it?
That's what I think it is.
I don't know. It's scaring me.
Yeah. Oh, anyway, well, I'm always on high alert for everything.
So you broke up around Christmas.
Around Christmas. Oy. He was actually really integral in me getting the surgery, too.
Oh,
because
wow.
He was really worried that, well, nobody wants to have preventative surgery. It's unnecessary, essentially.
Right.
But, you know, if you have a family history of breast cancer or, you know, my mom had it.
Yeah. That's all it takes is one family member that's close for you to have it.
Yeah.
And then be like, all right.
Two aunts die of it. My grandma, I didn't need it, you know. So he was very, like, supportive of that and really got me through that, which I was super happy to have. And I think that's one of the reasons we stayed together, because then a little while later he had to have lower spine surgery. Mm. And so we just took care of each other. And it's hard to hate somebody when you have...
When you're, like, handicapped a little
when
bit.
When you're handicapped. Yeah. And I he never, ever did anything to me that was, like, egregious. Like, he never cheated on me. He never was, like... He never like raised his voice in an unfair way. I didn't have any reason to not be friends with them.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that it was like a very long transition period between like we're husband and wife to we're friends. There was a very weird period because we also did our own divorce.
Wow.
Oh, wow. You were
legal
just
Zoom.
Like, wow. That's very Pinteresty of you.
It was. Like, so
DIY divorce, guys.
By the way, we're supposed to have like a subtitle for every show, and this one will be "It's hard to hate someone when you're handicapped."
Subtitle, Jesus.
Especially when they're being cool about it.
I know. Don't you hate it when like someone's just being so cool, and you're like, I need to break up with you. It's not being nice.
I want to break up with you.
Oh no,
I know. So that was then. So then I was like in my 30s, dating. As if I was 24. Because I'd been in a marriage. I didn't really know. So I got on OkCupid, which was like the only dating app at the time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And just went crazy.
Yeah.
Just went nuts.
Wow.
Went so successful nuts. For you? In a
sense?
Yeah,
in a sad way. In a sad way.
Did it give you material at least? That's all I think.
Okay, there's one guy, but I didn't meet him on OkCupid. I met him. So before I started making money full time as a writer, I was taking headshots and I had a full business. Like I was doing pretty well. And then one of the jobs I got, and sometimes I would do corporate headshots. So I would go on location and do like real estate agents or whatever. So there was this company that was a real estate company and I was there doing their headshots and they were in like a Class D building, which is like 4 floors. It's a small office building. Mm-hmm. And I was in there and they were on the 4th floor and then this guy got in the elevator on the 3rd floor and he was like the hottest person I've ever seen in my life. Like I was like full cartoon eyes, like, oh my God, this guy is massively good looking. And he starts talking to me and I was like, oh, okay, I guess. And I weirdly, because I was so depressed from being divorced, I was very thin and what happens when you're depressed and you get thin is everyone tells you how good you look. So you keep the cycle going right. because you are, you know, you want to keep
right.
these
people,
compliments.
You don't want people to be like, what happened to you?
Yeah. You need to fill a hole inside you. And the right. hole gets filled by people complimenting on how depressed you look. But then they say you look good, but you know it's because you're just smoking cigarettes and eating chicken breasts.
Right.
Yeah. So this, and it gave me a weird kind of confidence that was really undeserved and superficial, but this guy started talking to me and I was like, oh, I can get this guy. Like, I can get this guy. So I got my number, and then it turned out he was like this really open and honest S&M dude, like into very weird things. And I was not quite interested in going there with a stranger, you know? But anyway, the best story is that. So one day, so we made out a couple times, and then he tried to get me to do some stuff. And I was like, one of the things he wanted me to do was to pee on him in the bathtub. Mm-hmm. And I was like,
oh, that's so Sex in the City.
No.
Stop.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I was like, I don't want to do that. And then the other thing he wanted me to do was, and he was so nice about it, which is weird. Like, if someone was like creepy about it, you could almost be like, he was just like, look, I understand I'm fucked up. Like, my parents are totally normal. I don't understand. But what I would really like is for you to dress up like a baby and drink my cum out of a baby bottle.
Oh my God.
I was like, and then I was like, I'm done dating. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm out of the game.
That'll make you put the lid on it.
Done.
So what kind of baby bottle did you use?
It was a Gerber. Okay, and yeah.
Oh God.
Can you imagine?
That's amazing.
That is, but it's so specific.
Right. Well, somebody, here's the other thing. You would assume somebody had to have said yes to that before,
and
right?
Someone must have either, he saw that somewhere.
Got the idea somewhere.
That you don't make that up.
No.
Yeah, that's very creative. I'm a creative writer and I can't think of that. Like, that's some real shit.
It's so shocking. And for someone to say it to you with a straight face, like, not as a joke.
Very specific. Yeah.
So specific. So then I was like, and I was in between. So I had worked on a TV show that no one watched called Infomania, which was on Current TV, which was Al Gore's network, which was very weird, like deep in the high ups numbers on the cable. So I was doing headshots after that, and then I was transitioning into, I don't know, anything else. I was really super lost. Yeah. I was doing commercials and stuff, and I was booking a lot of acting stuff because I was very thin and because I had weird confidence about myself. And I just got really into like reading. I just started reading a ton of books and just doing whatever the fuck I wanted and not really dating. It was great.
Yeah.
I was like going to the beach on a Tuesday, which I don't do.
Yeah.
Just stuff that I don't know, just like exploring. And I got really into like architectural photography. So when I wasn't taking headshots, I would just pick a place in LA and just go and take pictures for a day. And it was great. That's also when I got really heavy into weed, because you kind of need both.
Yeah. Right.
Look how cool that shape of the building is.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. Exactly.
I get it.
Look how the sun hits this window.
Exactly.
It might not always be interesting, but I had fun doing it. Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason why it exists, I think. It's to appreciate the little things I didn't notice before.
Yeah.
Well, you know that comedian Josh Wolf does that high walk thing? Yeah. That's pretty funny. If you don't know, go follow him on Twitter. And he gets high and he goes on a walk and tweets about what stupid shit happens on the walk. And it's fun.
Great.
It's
fun. That's great. But then, So I wasn't dating anybody, and then I was at a birthday party and I met this guy who is great, and that's my husband now.
Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they always tell me, because I feel like I've been single
and
for ages.
I said I was never going to get remarried.
Yeah.
Ever.
I always say, like, I'm not going to get, no one's going to, it's not going to happen for me. But everyone's like, it's going to happen when you least expect it. And I always hear stories where, you know.
I mean, I was there. I was at this birthday party with my ex-husband.
That's weird.
Super weird. And he was going to a party with his new girlfriend. So I knew he was going to leave eventually. And then I was smoking at the time. So I was bummed a cigarette off this guy who was a friend of a friend. And
what a great way to meet people, I must say.
Cigarettes are a great way to meet people.
I used to smoke cigarettes. And I remember, like, I'd really, like, bond with some people sometimes.
Do you miss them?
I miss the bonding.
I don't miss the way I feel.
I don't miss the way I feel because I felt terrible. I didn't want to work out. I didn't want to, like, I was just tired. And
oh, yeah.
I,
my skin looked like dog shit.
Yeah. I had like bags under my eyes.
I smoked for 20 years. And I'm now 8 years clean.
That's a long time.
So, well, I didn't smoke that long.
No, it's like, you have to say of cigarettes.
Yeah,
yeah. Of cigarettes.
I'm 8 years
clean. And then I moved to New York for a little bit for like a gig. And then I think this is what got me to Offam. It was so expensive. I couldn't keep up the habit.
They're crazy expensive.
How
now.
Much are they now?
They're like $10 a pack.
Yeah, when
in
I was
County.
Living in New York, it was like $8, and that was steep.
Oh no, New York, it's like $15 a pack. I'm
oh
not
god,
kidding.
Yeah, well,
not even kidding.
Well, I was doing this really fucking dumb thing where I would pretend that I wasn't smoking. Mm-hmm. This was like 8 years ago. Pretend I wasn't smoking, but then be like, I really want a cigarette. So I'd buy a pack of cigarettes. I'd have the cigarette, but I wouldn't want to keep the pack. So I would throw it in the garbage.
Oh, it's
so I was buying. Did you ever do that?
Like $8 for one cigarette.
It's
essentially
stupid.
I did that like a year ago when I was really mad. When I get really mad, I want a cigarette these days. And I just was really mad about like this like email I got. Just so strange. Like, but I was just like, fuck, I need a cigarette. And I just bought a pack. Smoked half of one. Then realized, nope. And then I threw the rest away. It's kind of like with food. When you want to binge eat, you're like, oh, put salt on it, ruin it, put it away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very totally. In the garbage.
I know. I meet so many people, though, that have like bouts of like cigarette usage, and then like I can't handle, like I need a little bit and then throw it away out of sight.
But it's so weird for something that, I don't know if you feel like this too, like when I smell it, I get nauseous.
Yeah.
It depends. I mean, if I'm drinking and I smell it, I might go, I remember how good those things were.
Ugh,
but
no.
No, I don't miss. After you know,
it gets
a year.
On your hair. Like, it's so gross.
I know.
It's
I don't
so
have
gross.
Hair, though, so it didn't...
My friend who introduced me to Second City in Houston, we used to go to a club called Numbers, which was just the hashtag, but everyone knew it was Numbers.
Right.
And we used to go to like the New Order night and smoke a million cigarettes. And then she got me in the habit of showering before we went to bed.
Okay.
So I would spend the night at her house. She'd be like, you got to shower before you go to bed. Because I don't want my sheets smelling like smoke. And I loved it because I smelled, I woke up in the morning and my throat still tasted like cigarettes, but I smelled really good.
It's all that matters, really, guys. As long as
all
you
that matters.
Good.
At the end of the day, yes. Keep smoking, everyone.
Just please smoke so you can find love and happiness and meet new people, friends who you don't have time for.
You know what? I'm single. I'm going to take up smoking again. I think it's a good idea.
Don't you dare.
What do you do? Like what? Because I have this guy who I was working with, and he just moved here actually from Orange County. And he was like, how do I meet people? And I was really struggling to tell him because I did not know.
Hmm. Oh,
I don't know how you meet people unless you're in an industry.
Honestly,
or
having a podcast helps.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
Some of my best friends, it's because I was like, hey, come on my podcast. And like 3 years later, like Randy, do you mm-hmm. know, like Randy and I always text.
Really?
She came with me to buy furniture.
Really?
Yeah. And Randy wrote Mrs. Doubtfire. And at first I was like, yeah, come on my podcast. Let's talk about how you wrote Mrs. Doubtfire. And now she's 64 and she's like my fairy godmother and we hang out.
I love
and
this.
And she dates on Bumble and sends me pictures of like these guys. And I'm like, yes or no on them. It's so much fun.
I love this so fucking much.
Tell him to start a podcast. Whatever. Like he could be
like an audio engineer. Like, I don't see why he can't do this.
Go.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a great way to meet people.
That's great. Oh my God. That makes me so fucking happy.
Yeah.
I want to be friends with the person who wrote Adam's Family Values. And I want to be friends with the person who wrote Beverly Hills, Troop Beverly Hills.
Oh, I don't know those people.
Beverly Hills. Who wrote
that? But who wrote that?
It's a woman. She lives in New York. Oh. I have a friend who knows her. And I was like, you have to.
Oh.
It drew me to her. And she's like, she doesn't.
Do you know Kiwi?
Want to do that. No.
Kiwi wrote Legally Blonde. And
no.
She's apparently, I went to a party, you know, Duncan Birmingham,
mm-hmm.
who came on our show.
Yes.
A friend of mine now invited me to a St. Patrick's Day party. And Kiwi was there. And he's like, oh, everyone's friends with Kiwi. Kiwi wrote Legally Blonde. And I think 10 Things I Hate About You. And she's apparently friends with like everyone. And I'm like, I want to be friends with Kiwi. And she like showed up so late. And by the time she showed up, I wanted to go home. But I wouldn't have met her had I not met Duncan, who I had on the show. It's all connected.
Yeah, yes. All connected.
Yeah.
And especially, I think it's hard. I would imagine it's hard for, because most of the writing I've done have been on TV shows. But this closed circuit that I have is like a lot of the stuff is based off of Throwing Shade, the podcast that I do.
Right.
So when we sell something off of that, it's like, well, I get to meet people that I've already worked with. Like we just hire people we've already worked with, and then
right.
it's Brian. Right, so, like, right. There's not a lot of new stuff coming in the system.
Well, it's like when I saw you at that women's, like, networking thing.
Yes.
A lot of people, sometimes you go to these things and you're like, oh, yeah, I do know half these people.
Yeah.
Like, it's I don't know if it's a good feeling, but sometimes scary, too.
It's
like, oh, my gosh, again. Like,
yeah. Here
we go again.
Yeah. Also, you see, like, all white people know each other in LA.
I know.
Yeah.
How did you get into podcasting?
Well, okay, I had a podcast a long time ago called The Shit Parade Show with my old writing partner, Joel, who I'm still friends with.
That's good.
Still friends with everybody. There's one person I'm not friends with anymore, but I won't mention his name. But he is he's a stand-up comedian, and he's a terrible person. I'm not going to Me Too him right now, but I have thoughts about it. Okay. He didn't really Me Too me too. Guys, I don't want to get it. It's not. It's like not.
Save it for a think piece.
Yeah. I'll save it for my think piece. So, I had that podcast, and it was like not successful. Also, it was like 2006. No one was fucking listening to podcasts. So then, when I met my performing partner Brian Safi on Infomania, when that show got canceled, I was like, "Hey, I have podcasting equipment. Do you want to keep doing our segments as a podcast?" At the time, he was doing something called That's Gay, where he was taking gay tropes and patterns in media and kind of putting them together and going like, hey, look at this basic bitch shit that everyone's doing all the time, the way they're treating gay people or erasing them from the narrative and, you know, not casting them in gay roles. And then I was doing a similar thing with women's issues and trying to make them funny and talk about like tropes and patterns and all that. So then we just started throwing shade, which is where we each talk about those things and then try to make them funny. And it just seemed natural to keep doing that on a podcast. And we were so weirdly restricted on that show, which never made sense to me because we were struggling for ratings. And I was like, we need to do shit that's like loud and unapologetic. And
right. We
weren't allowed to do that. So I think by the time that was over, we really still wanted to keep talking about this stuff, but now we could do it in a way where was absolutely on our own terms.
Mm-hmm.
So when you started out, did you have a network? Were you just on
your own? Just on our own. And then Jesse Thorne from
Maximum Fun.
Yeah. He asked us to join the network, and which we did. And that was a fantastic, we were there for like almost 5 years.
Great. Mm-hmm. I was a guest on like one of Dave Holmes shows.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And I met everyone there and they're all great. Yeah.
And then you went to Earwolf. Correct.
And then we moved to Earwolf.
Well, cause did you move with Colin Anderson? Cause I know he moved to Earwolf too.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Colin, he was like, would you consider hearing other offers essentially? Cause see, when we started doing podcasts, there were like two networks and that was it. Like it wasn't this thing where you like shop it around to media or anything else. Like there was nobody else. So you didn't have options to leverage anything or, you know, there was no bidding wars or anything like that,
yeah.
You know? So it's gotten a lot more, it's gotten a lot better for the podcasters, I think, because of that. But I don't know. I'm interested to see the economics behind it and how it
plays out
because I'm not delusional. I don't think that our podcast is going to be successful or sustainable forever. You know,
well, it's just like TV shows. Like they're great for what they are.
Yeah.
But like you can only go for so long.
Yeah.
Before they become kind of stale.
You get burnt out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You get really burnt out. Yeah.
So when did you decide to write your book?
Okay. So that happened. So I actually started writing a different book.
Okay.
That was a funny book about like all the fun sex and stuff that I had in LA. And then
baby story. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Baby batter in a bottle. And then I pitched a version of that. I did a treatment, which is essentially like this insane document you have to put together. So you write like three chapters.
Yeah.
An intro. You have to write like, who do you know and who could help you sell your book? Like you basically have to brag about
give it forward. Yeah.
Right.
All that shit.
Ugh.
Who you are, what your credits are. Like you have to sell the book and sell yourself and sell your ability to sell the book.
It's the only reason why I want to be Cher, so I don't have to do any of that.
No, you don't have to.
I'm just fucking Cher. Write my book.
Like, write my book. I'll sit here and dictate it to you.
Yeah.
But so I pitched it. So I got a book manager or agent from that. And then she pitched it to this woman, Suzanne, who's my editor now. And Suzanne knew the podcast and she said, well, why don't you just write something like what you do on the podcast already.
Mm-hmm.
But in my mind, the reason I was writing the sex book is because I didn't want to write about politics. But she was right to push me in that direction because it was
what you knew.
It was what I knew. It's what I know. I already had a bunch of material that I could pull from, and it was time to have something like that. It's a feminist book about how to. It's called Feminasty, A Complicated Woman's Guide to Surviving Patriarchy Without Drinking Yourself to Death. And it's practical stuff about like stuff that you might not think is methods you're being marginalized, but this is stuff that's happening. That's not the obvious stuff like equal pay.
Right.
No, and, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, like for example, one of the chapters is about how all the people on top levels of cosmetic companies are straight white men.
I know.
And so when I found that out, I threw all my NARS makeup in the garbage and I restocked my entire cosmetics cabinet with.
What do you buy now?
Okay, so I haven't really figured out.
I'm going to geek out right now, guys.
I haven't really figured out all of it, but okay. I use Juice Beauty BB cream.
Okay, that's a good one. I've used it. Good.
And Beauty Counter is another great one. She is a female-owned business, and it's also like an Avon. You can basically buy it from your friend.
Right.
It's a Mary Kay for millennials, basically.
I know that, yeah.
And then I love RMS Beauty. Mm-hmm. And for face care, I'm using this brand, Marie Veronique. She's got a crazy story. She's in Northern California. She used to be a high school science teacher. She has a biochem and chemistry degree, taught high schoolers, which is the perfect training for being in the cosmetics industry because it's ruthless. And her daughter is also a biochemist. So they create natural beauty cleansers and toners and oils and stuff based on their education and what they know about nature. And the stuff smells so good. It smells so good.
It's scary how brands that are only for women or mostly for women geared toward marketed towards women more than anything. That's the biggest culprit, I think. And yet a man is making the biggest decisions about them. It's really scary.
Not only that, one of the guys, I don't remember his name, but it's Arnaud. I think he runs Louis Vuitton. There's a bunch of, it's a lot of French guys and it's a lot of Italians.
Yeah, a lot of Italians. There's like those sleazy Italians.
Super sleazy. Like
a lot of Me Too stories, I'm sure, behind them.
Oh, well, the guy who used to run Revlon, the CEO of Revlon. Do you know about the guy? He said he can smell black people when they walk in. Oh my God.
Yeah. It's so scary. Yeah.
Horrible.
So
that's because you're exposing them.
These people are just taking your money.
I know.
They're taking your money. And they're, because like, especially with a company like Estee Lauder,
they own other brands. It's scary.
Huge umbrella companies.
Yeah. It's like Amazon buying other companies to like get under their umbrella and Facebook doing that. It's like,
The other thing I talk about is how many things in media have girl in the title. No. Like books and TV shows and
girl movies. Boss.
Yeah. A lot of girl. And like the Fearless Girl statue. Yeah. Exactly. And how women aren't girls anymore.
I hate
Or women are girls now. They can't be women.
I hate that. And I also hate when people call me cute.
It's so...
Like, we call 10-year-olds cute. We don't call women cute.
Do people do that to you in meetings? Like, oh, that idea is cute.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. It's weird also being a female that works primarily behind the camera when I go to meetings. Because they feel like, oh, we can say stuff to you that we say to the boys. Like, and like, no, you can't.
Yeah.
Like stuff like that. Like,
yeah.
Oh, that's cute. That's... No.
And I often feel like sometimes the cute thing is I don't want to tell you how I really feel because you're a woman. So I'm going to say cute, even though there's an underbelly.
It's like Switzerland. It's not really neutral.
No.
I know it looks like it's neutral, but it's not.
Just say you don't like my idea.
Yeah.
Or say something else, but don't say it's cute.
Yeah. Just say you're a Nazi. Go for it. It's just as bad.
Erin's book, Feminasty, comes out in September, right?
September 4th,
and it's available for pre-order now. That you go to Amazon or what have you.
You should get it.
I have a website, feminasty.com, if you don't want to... Depending on your book retailing...
Preferences.
I know.
You can buy from big stores or tiny stores. I've got them all on there.
Do you have an audiobook?
I do. I'm recording it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Great.
I love audiobooks.
Yeah.
So go for
it. I'm really excited.
So we should ask Erin the final question, right?
Oh, yeah.
We have two.
What's that?
We have two final questions.
Okay. What's the first final question?
What's your biggest failure, do you think?
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, my biggest failure?
out of everything. It doesn't have to be career or the relationship.
But I think my biggest failure is not doing what I already knew I wanted to do and letting other people, and this is kind of, I don't know if this is a cop out, but I let other people dictate, tell me what they thought I should do. And I didn't start pursuing my career till I was 24, 25, really.
That's still young, I think.
It's still young, but I have a friend who just didn't go to college and came to LA and started writing, and she's killing it because she just was like, no, that's what I do. I don't want to waste my time going and getting a marketing degree that I don't want.
Yeah.
I feel like there, because if I let fear dictate, like, oh, but I have to have a degree to fall back on or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid of that.
You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't use it.
Yeah.
And I never needed it in the first place. So yeah. I just think, like, trusting my witch's gut.
Yeah.
I wish I'm trying to be better at that, because whenever I don't listen to it, I do something wrong, or I make a mistake, or there's a mishap, or I don't trust that I'm good enough to do the thing.
That makes
and
sense.
And that means anything. Like,
yeah.
You know, I don't always want to write comedy. I want to write drama, and I want
to horror.
Yes, because I do have an idea for
you.
Want to
be the next Steven Spielberg, and you can, right?
And
that
I can.
Really is the message.
I can sit behind a camera and order the DP around while he does all the work.
I really do. Like, the reason why I even started my horror writing course for women. It's just for women. It's just because I read so many scripts. My manager basically started the blood list, which is like the blacklist for unproduced horror screenplays, and everything she gives me is men writing it. And everyone's buying it. And I'm like, ladies, stop writing these rom-coms. Write this. You can do this.
Yeah.
And most horror movies are written through a male gaze where there's like this virgin that gets killed in the first 10 minutes. I'm just like sick of it.
Sounds awesome.
And yeah. So I'm so glad that you're
I have an idea that I once the book stuff is done, I'm going to start working on it. I'm really excited.
I can't wait to hear.
It's a feminist horror thing.
Amazing.
That involves Nazis.
Great.
Amazing.
Even better.
You know,
we need to talk about this.
Nazis. Yeah.
Yes. So the book comes out
November. Nope.
No.
September 4th.
Yes.
Comes out. I'll be on a book tour then.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
And you're also going to, I think you're doing Throwing Shade in London.
Yeah. I'm also going on a tour of Throwing Shade. The book tour and the.
I care.
Why'd you say?
I have a flat in London, so I care. I go a lot there. So
do you really?
Yeah,
I'm my grandma's, really jealous.
Yeah, but I love London, and I'm so happy.
It's so going. I didn't know about these tiny markets they have.
Yeah,
I figured out that my last day last year, and now that's going to be the first thing I do the first day.
I'll email you a list of tons of tiny markets.
Will you tell me your favorite tiny markets?
Yes,
because I only went to Spitalfields.
Oh, what? No, we'll update you. And then our last question is, what's your favorite charity?
NARAL. Do you know who they are? They're like, I call them hardcore Planned Parenthood, because they're I think where Planned Parenthood has to write a very
safe.
Yeah. They have to write a fine line, because not all of their places, not all their facilities do abortions, but some of them do. So but NARAL's like, no, bitch, we're pro-choice. Deal with us. So it stands for, and it's an oldie, it's been around since the 70s. They do a lot of legal work with anti-choice laws. They fight a lot for abortion access, birth control, pregnancy discrimination, which is a huge thing in America.
God,
so do you listen to The Daily?
Yeah, I know.
Did you listen to that?
The UPS one? Did you hear about that?
Oh,
yeah. That was crazy.
National Abortion and Reproductive Rights Action League.
Yes.
There we go.
And we are going to give them $100 Thank you
so
much for being here.
Can I match it?
Sure.
Oh, my God, yes. So great when we have our guest match.
It's very exciting.
We keep tabs on who matches.
You do?
You're not supposed to say that on the show anyway. But yes, we know who matches.
I like to reveal once they match, to be like,
we got
a
match.
The few that do.
Well, it's interesting because I do think about... I think a lot about how women can help other women, and especially when you've got, like, you know, a kid, and you're a single mom, or you don't have access to, you know, child care. Very hard to get to rise above your station.
And
so.
I also think a lot of women are, like, kind of from birth, I guess, because of society, are like bred to put down other women in the process. So I feel like they have men and women against them. So it's good that women are just like, hey, that's not cool. We're going to help our fellow system.
Yeah, I'm into this. Yeah. I'm into this new big old pink wave that's happening.
Pink and blue.
Blood wave.
Ew.
More like a carry situation.
I think that's a perfect way to end another episode of Failing Up. Erin, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much.
We really appreciate it.
Thanks
everybody.
Yeah.